The live-action hit inspired by the classic Japanimation feature.
I love Japanimation. I love before we had, like, a codified word of anime.
Yep. Nothing says Japanimation like Gary Daniels. Welcome to the podcast, everyone.
Dogs, they're coming. They're coming your way. They'll be here soon.
You mean to kill me?
Welcome to the future.
In a time beyond tomorrow. A new order has begun. Innocence has no chance. And only the North Star can bring back the peace.
Fist of the North Star!
Fist of the North Star.
Kenshiro!
There's one thing that says Japanimation more than that. It's Malcolm McDowell.
That's true. That's true.
Malcolm McDowell speaking through a small child hovering in the air. Now that's anime to me, baby.
I'm pretty sure.
Which one was more anime, when he did it through the small hovering child or the zombie mummies?
Oh, right. Scene. I was gonna be like small child free, but like, oh, right, the inexplicable mummy in the middle of the film. That's a great point.
The dream mummy is a pretty good one, too, to be fair.
Yeah, the dream mummy doesn't really come back up again, huh?
Yeah. Very different than a dream mommy.
Welcome, everybody. This is Rough Cuts, a podcast where we watch movies about dogs in some way, shape, or form. Don't worry, we'll figure it out. And then review the dog at the end. I'm Boyks. This is my co-host, Ilion.
Hello.
And we have a special guest star, Ty Tuesday.
Howdy. I like HMK, so this was treat?
We did Fist of the North Star, a.k.a. Hokuto no Ken, the 1995 live-action Japanimation feature.
So this should be called Hokuto no Dog, because there's no fucking dog, Boyks. I just want to point out that this, Boyks is talking about, like, oh, this is about dogs. We've been doing it where whoever edits the episode gets to pick the movie. And I just want to point out for everybody listening that keeps on going, why do they keep doing these no dog movies? That's Boyks. It's Boyks every time.
No, it says on the back there's a character named Jackal. I googled Jackal and it says they're a dog. That counts.
God damn it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say the character Jackal is also quite a dog in film. That's so true. I'm cool with it.
So, one funny thing I was looking up, this movie is actually, this exists because the director saw the South Korean live-action Hokuto no Ken movie, which came out 2 years prior.
Okay.
And then decided they wanted to make one for the Western audience.
Huh.
Yeah. That would explain some of the, plot changes.
Choices. Yeah. Like just wandering around in a motorcycle shooting people, you know, hooked on no Ken.
That guy was having a blast.
Oh man. So I guess the anime movie problem, this came up a lot. The Dragon Ball Evolutions, in this case the Fist of the North Star, it's so hard to translate for some reason, manga pages to a live-action white guy movie, right? Like, that's what they're trying to do.
Well, do you think that maybe some of that problem is Malcolm McDowell saying, Kenshiro?
Kenshiro?
Kenshiro!
Kenshiros. Yeah? No, that's part of it. That's definitely part of it.
Oh, Kenshiro, my son.
Getting the most British people possible to play all the Japanese characters might be part of the, you know, vibe issue.
But I also get the feeling that they actually did care about the source material enough to be like, we kind of want this to be cool, and we're going to try and get some of those shots that we really liked from from the manga. I mean, they're going to fail miserably at it.
Yeah.
Pretty good practical effects on the head explosions. They definitely had a plan going in with those, and like those looked pretty okay. They were like fairly grotesque. They definitely made me go, oh, that guy's like super dead, which is, you know, kind of the point. That guy's super dead.
I like the squibs under the skin too.
Lots of squibbing.
Over the Southern Cross.
Yeah. Like when he's like having his like arms explode is very good. Like Kenshiro's whole little like all of his wounds exploding and his elbows just deciding to gush into fountains of blood is pretty solid. Mm-hmm. There's some good stuff there.
Here's a fun fact too. Before we get into this more, this movie had a Japanese dub.
Oh,
as you can expect, but they got the actual 80s like Japanese anime movie voice actors for Hokuto no Ken to voice the Americanized characters.
Man, I almost want to watch that.
I was gonna say that'd have been a fun trip. Holy shit.
So I feel like they watched the wrong version. Like, I mean, it's not gonna fix any of the problems with this movie, but it's gonna be way funnier. anyway, so Hokuto no Ken, Fist of the North Star. Let's go over a quick review of I guess I don't know if we should talk about Fist of the North Star, like what the story arc is and what this does poorly, or if we should just talk about what it tries to accomplish in the story in this film.
I mean, the thing is, like, Fist of the North Star is like a very, very basic story, right? Like, it's like a very basic revenge wasteland kung fu story. Like, that's really what it is. It's like Kenshiro has been wronged by his brother, who believes he had been wronged by Kenshiro, and they end up in a big climactic battle. And like, there's all sorts of little details and set dressings that they get wrong, but like, that is the core conceit of it. And they do kind of get that right a little. Right. Yeah.
They sure try.
Yeah, they try. Like, so it's about essentially two different beliefs of kung fu and two different schools fighting each other for, you know, which is the correct one. This is a classic kung fu tale in movie form. So that in itself is pretty normal. The post-apocalyptic stuff, there is some of that for sure in Fist of the North Star. Maybe not so like 80s post-apocalyptic like this movie tries to pin it, I guess.
Yeah, it feels like very like Mad Max-y compared to like HNK was very Mad Max-y, don't get me wrong, but like even more so. Like it kind of leaned in more on the like the drought and the water and that kind of stuff, like the starvation post-apocalypse, as opposed to the more just violent, just like everything was destroyed. Like we still have access to infrastructure and logistics and stuff. It got blown up by like a bomb, like a bomb or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost the Tank Girl like version of the story. Yeah. Interestingly enough.
Which has that Malcolm McDowell crossover. Yeah.
Well, Malcolm McDowell
and
doesn't
a guy
get
doing
like,
whippets.
It does have
whippets. And a dude doing whippets. Yes. Yeah. And it's always the raddest dude possible. In there, it's kangaroos. In here, well, we'll get to that.
Oh my god. I'm so mad about the arc of Whippet Dracula.
You can't even drop Whippet Dracula. We're gonna get to it.
No, we can talk about it now.
Whippet Nosferatu has like an actual character arc. I think that he has more of a character arc than anyone else in this film, right?
Easily like, more than Shin. Easily more than Shin, which is unbelievable.
Shin being the main villain.
Whippet Dracula's hanging out with the Nazi gang, and then he has a change of heart and decides, you know, maybe this isn't a good thing. Maybe we shouldn't kill people for no reason because it's fun. Maybe the whippets are changing my mind.
I love children and the arts. And then he just catches a literal random stray.
Yes.
I'm so mad about that. Why'd they even have his art change? It didn't matter.
But he's rad as hell because he's doing whippets off of something very specific, which I noticed.
Taking rips off an unlit torch like an absolute monster.
Way before Willem Dafoe's Lighthouse.
It's true.
What if we could just get high on fuel, baby?
Oh, he's whipping it again.
Oh, good news. Whip it, guys, back.
Hell yeah, brother. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the story of Fist of the North Star as shown in Fist of the North Star 1995. So the movie starts with Kenshiro just wandering around the wasteland, and it's trying to set the scene of the North Star and the Southern Cross and how they're fighting in Kung Fu world in post-apocalyptic world America somewhere, I guess.
Yeah, just a place. Yeah.
And then there's a town in the post-apocalypse called Paradise, who has water issues, and they need water. And there's a ragtag group of people that are all part of this town. Mm-hmm. So, your classic Mad Maxian setup, I guess.
And then they also just randomly have an old man get murdered by somebody else, who is a big reveal.
Correct.
Because he asks him, like, alright, take off your face mask, I need to see you. And he reveals his face, and you go, okay, we as the audience don't know who the fuck this is.
Yeah, so it's like Malcolm McDowell's just sitting inside of his mist room, where there's going to be a puzzle later, I guess. And then some guy walks up in a hood. He's like, I know who you are. Show your face. And they do the reveal, and we have no... Who the fuck is this guy?
It's 10 seconds into the film.
Because the old man's reaction is like, oh, it's you, you old son of a bitch. I knew it was you the whole time. And yeah, we're just all like, who's... Is that Doug from accounting? Who's this guy?
Yeah, and then he kills him. And we're like, was that important that he killed him? Who was that? Who were either of these people?
There's a lot of that in this film. You were saying that there's, like, a problem with adapting, like, anime to live action.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the classic problem. And I think that one of the biggest stumbling blocks all the time is that, like, a lot of... I guess that the thing is they think they can do it because a lot of anime stories are very basic. In a way, like, we were saying, like, how this is a very basic revenge story. But also, they're really, really long. Like...
It almost feels like they're adapting... going, like, panel to panel, and they're just trying to get the visual shot, but they don't understand the establishing reason for it.
You have so much... Like, even though it's a basic story, there are, like, 1,000 chapters. You can't just kind of, like, okay, well, we'll just do the first arc. It's like, bro, the first arc is 180 manga. Like,
also, I think there was, like, a big assumption for a long time with anime adaptations that, like, it's not to get people who weren't into the anime to start watching the anime and check out the franchise, which is, like, the modern ones, right? Like,
when
they put out, like, the One Piece for Netflix, that's, like, getting new people on board, which is great. It's super cool. This was more like, hey, we're going to serve people who already love the source material. We're kind of piggybacking off of its fame as opposed to, like, trying to proliferate it further. So they just, like, assume you already know Hakuto no Ken. And there's definitely a couple parts where they just, like, shortcut and they're like, yeah, you probably know who Shin is. And it's like, no, a lot of these people don't know who Shin is.
Yeah.
Like, for example, the two hosts of this podcast.
Well, I played the PS3 game. I think I know who Shin is. Come on. I'm surprised they didn't bring Nugget in, or the arcades you have to find in the desert that then let you
Where's
play Super
Where's the batting cages?
Yeah, come on. That game literally has a batting cage.
I need a UFO catcher. Where's the UFO catcher?
What the fuck? Yeah. Doesn't make any damn sense. Anyway, so... There's the shot of Shin killing his master or whatever, I guess. It's important maybe later.
Kenshiro's master, maybe? It is unclear, yeah.
Yeah. And then it cuts to Paradise, which is getting attacked by a motorcycle gang, which is just driving in, shooting people at random, hooting and hollering, doing whippets.
Yeah. As I refer to it, disorganized crime, explicitly. Like, just here to cause problems, really just lowering the economic value of the whole area, not really extracting any value, just causing problems.
So in Kung Pao, they make a joke We're going to make some Kung Pao references. If you haven't seen Kung Pao Enter the Fist, you need to watch that movie. In Kung Pao, there's a scene where there's just children in the background, and then they're just narrating, "We're children! We're children!"
I'll take a pound of nuts.
That's a lot of nuts!
This is that, except we're doing crime! We're doing crime!
Yeah. We're oppressing! We're oppressing!
Yeah.
I believe that we called this gang the Jimmy Wrestlers at one point. Yes. Yeah. That's all they're doing. They're just wrestling
Jimmys.
That's
all they do. That's their whole reason for living. Yeah.
I love causing bedlam!
I've got the power of anime and God. Extremely SDS energy.
You've heard of organized crime. Well, we're disorganized crime. Fuck some stuff up and leave. I don't know, boys.
What's the plan here? I don't fucking care.
Rustle their jimmies. I don't know.
And then it hard cuts to Shin talking to his brother after he's feeding him his marmalade that he made, I guess.
Yeah.
What was that about?
The pink slime was... I was going to ask about the secret of the ooze there.
I don't know what the fuck that was.
Did that come back up again?
No,
yeah,
wait, no.
Did you ever mention the ooze? Okay, no, that just dies here, huh?
No, he's just okay, like, I made this raspberry jam. Try it, brother.
I wanted to ask our Hokuto no Ken translator, Ty, if there was some weird tie that I didn't know.
I don't think so. Unless there's like a part at the beginning that I don't remember. No, I don't remember any jam feeding being like a core conceit of Hokuto no Ken.
He talks about how it's the most delicious food ever and stuff. Like, he has a little speech about it,
yeah,
too.
I don't know what that was about at
like,
all.
They really draw attention to the pink ooze that he's eating, this Nickelodeon gag-ass shit that he's got.
I have no idea.
So Shin's talking to his brother. He's like, by the way, brother, there cannot be anyone who can know the Southern Cross arts but me, because I'm the Southern Crossman, the man who knows it. And you knew it at once, so you must die. Oh, but I don't practice it anymore, so I can just, like, go. I can just leave. You don't have to see me. I can get the hell out of here. Yeah. But Shin is taking none of that, so he tells his brother to kick him in the face 4,000 times. Again. Again. You call that a kick? I'm winning
just
right now.
Just keep doing it. Yeah.
If only there was someone here who was really good at high kicks who could stop me.
How do you like my foot-to-face style?
Yeah.
Yeah, yep.
You don't have the choice. Ken.
Okay.
Ken.
So, he gets kicked in the face a bunch, and then he kills his brother using the Southern Cross technique of punching him in the gut with his glowy hand, which causes his stomach to become glowy and then die. We were talking about this. So, the Fist of the North Star is about exploding you from inside, like causing some sort of change inward that then blows outward, where the Southern Cross is more about destroying the outside in. So, it's different, you know, but opposite and similar. I don't know if that really comes across in this movie. They kind of just do whatever.
No. Ty was saying later on there's like a rock montage scene that really...
Yeah, when Kenshiro's practicing his rock crushing to be all sweaty and sexy. Yeah. No, I remember that scene.
Yeah, because I think the idea was that generally North Star is kind of the school of, like, inward, like, silence and, like, figuring out all that kind of, like, changing inward flows and stuff like that. And so doing something like crushing a rock with your bare hands, maybe not really their thing, whereas more like...
It was like a display of external force, which doesn't really... Like, it's one of those things of, like, if you had Ken blow up a rock, you would have him, like, punch it once, nothing happens to the rock, and then a split second later, it, like, splits in half. Like, kind of thing. As opposed to Shin, who would just punch it once really hard, and it would explode into a billion fragments, is, like, kind of the idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but one makes our main character slash actor slash martial arts man look sick as hell. Right?
That's a good point.
That's the important thing.
We paid him for his abs. We gotta put him on display, okay?
So then after Shin kills his brother for eating his marmalade, or whatever happened in that scene, it hard cuts to Julia, who is Kenshiro's wife.
And you nailed it.
And was that it? Is that how it's...
Yeah, I think that was finally it. We were trying to mimic it, but I think you got it.
Kenshiro.
It cuts to Julia crying about beans. Which, I don't know. I vaguely get the point of this scene.
I think they realized having just, like, a lady be the prize at the end of a post-apocalyptic film was, like, a little weird without, like, the symbology and build-up and understanding of, like, what Julia represents. So they're like, we gave Julia beans that'll grow into a plant, which I guess no one has any seeds anywhere in the post-apocalypse, which isn't the problem, right? Like, they mentioned that there's acid rain and that's what's destroying everything, and like the ground is untenable to grow life and there's no natural water source that would grow life. So, like, Julia, who gives a shit about the beans?
She has a bag of beans and it reminds her of Kenshiro so much that she loves to smell the beans.
I forgot she huffs the beans.
She smells.
And when you're huffing beans, the only thing you can think about is Kenshiro.
Oh, Kenshiro.
Is her man.
From Hokuto no Ken. Every time I huff beans, I'm like, that's Kenshiro. I know that.
The beans, man, yeah. Yeah, but we know all about, like, they establish early on that they have all these water problems, and that's, like, the real issue with the acid rain, because they have to give out everyone's rations of liquid that they can use.
And Gatorade,
you know,
and
Sprite.
Pepsi and Sprite, yeah. I see Gatorade bottles in a bunch of scenes of this movie. I don't know why.
It's a little weird. It's a little weird. They're like, all right, well, there's no water, so what do you want? Like a Coke, or...
Is Pepsi
okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, is Pepsi okay in the post-apocalypse?
So then it hard cuts from Julia sniffing them beans to Rufio from Hook teaching a Taibo class in the street. And while some other guy just starts doing a speech about how they need to fight back against the gang that, you know, does crime. I don't know.
Rufio's like the annoying little kid who tags along, except he's like comes across as way too old for that role in this film.
He's supposed to be
least
like
to
the
me.
Young kid that follows the hero and wants to be like him and thinks he's cool. And
it's like literally a kid has a voice kind of like this, like that kind of thing. And instead it's like, bro, you're like 17.
Yeah. Like, he seems like he should be like 11. Like, he's coded like he's 11 or 12 or something, like preteen.
Mm-hmm.
And instead he's like, wait, this is young adult. Like, this guy might be 18, 19.
And when we say Rufio, we mean literally Rufio.
We mean literal Rufio, yeah.
They even put him in the same outfit and the same haircut and the same hairdo, everything. It's just Rufio. Again. I don't know why they did that. So the Taibo class, this means somewhat. So Bat is teaching people in town to fight back, so when the gang attacks, they won't all get immediately steamrolled.
Yeah.
But when the gang attacks, they get immediately steamrolled.
I was going to say, this next scene, gang attacks and they get immediately steamrolled, yes.
So what was the point of the Taibo class? Is Rufio just a bad, like, workout instructor?
Yes, that is canonical in this movie, yes. He's bad at this. He's bad at everything.
Yeah.
But Kenshiro left town after fixing Lin, a young girl in paradise who is, for some reason, blind. Although I think in the manga, she's deaf. So I think they changed that for some reason. But he fixes her vision and then leaves. After he's like, hey, kid, look at this cool trick. I'm going to blow up this kid's head. You know. And he just leaves. And then, so Bat has to go after him. And the town gets attacked when Bat's gone. But when Bat finds him, it's because Kenshiro saves Bat from being attacked by some hooligans. One of which just inexplicably has a leather jacket with his wife painted on the back.
Yes. not the hooligan's wife.
No.
But Kenshiro's wife.
Because that's like, you have to come back to paradise and help us. I'm not coming back. But those hooligans will attack. These hooligans will do nothing. I've already jump kicked them in the face. Is that my fucking wife?
Yeah, like a very strange reaction too. Like, sees a painting of his lost fiance and immediately goes into a blood rage.
Yes.
Yeah. Guy.
It's so weird.
The crossmen are coming.
Not these crossmen.
Real crossmen. These guys are a bunch of AWOLs.
What the?
My wife! To be clear, that is literally him seeing his fiance.
Yeah.
Stop wearing a jacket of my wife.
What was that all about?
That was the other thing I was gonna say, is he just has like this, like, his head's going back further and further, his eyes just go wider and wider, like it's like the Star Trek meme of the guy on the desk, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just losing his shit when he sees it.
I don't remember if it was this one. I think it was earlier with the skinhead gang. We also got the "you are already dead" for the first time. Probably the only time, actually.
That's the only time.
Where he does the, whoa, 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 whoa. What are you doing, tickling me, bro? And then they do the weird, like, really cool bulging, breathing side effect of the head kind of exploding.
Okay, this dude just, like, gently holding that on his head is killing me. I have seen this.
What are you trying to do, tickle me to death? Don't turn your back on me!
You're already dead.
Yeah, that shit's good. I think that they run into the problem. My guess, just because they did such a good job of that scene and a couple others for like that kind of explosive gore, is they just ran out of money. Like, it's just one of those budget constraints.
Maybe.
Like, they probably couldn't have him explode more than one person because that was.
Yeah.
But so, yeah. We were talking about this movie has good gore visuals. It does not have a very good sound department, nor does it have a very good, like, lighting department.
Nor can the actors particularly deliver the lines to the same quality of, for example, voice actors, where that's, like, their whole job.
Because when Kenshiro's doing that, you would think, like, like you would get in the anime.
Bruce Lee, like the Bruce Lee man, he punches very fast, yeah.
But instead he's just doing, I got you, you're dead now. Like, okay, man, I guess.
It's like if Shadow the Hedgehog did it.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. They should give Shadow a gun. I bet that would make him cooler.
They should give Kenshiro a gun. Wait, no, he would hate that.
he would not be fun with that. Yeah.
So then it cuts from that scene of him getting mad about this guy wearing a jacket with his fiance on it. First of all, where did he get the jacket? Did he paint it himself? I'm confused about this jacket more,
is
actually.
Is Shin sending those out? Yeah, because, like, here's the propaganda posters. Yeah. Did he just, like, be like, yo, I'm going to take this one and throw it on a silk screen?
Is it, like, a commemorative drop and you have to get it because it's limited quantity? And this guy waited in line to get this fucking Julia jacket?
He's just giving loot boxes out to his minions. And every once in a while, they get a cool Julia jacket.
I'm so confused. But it cuts back to Paradise getting immediately steamrolled by Jackal. And then Jackal says a really good line, which is, it ain't easy being sleazy.
It ain't easy being sleazy.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like you'd expect from Jaggle.
Yeah.
Yeah, for folks who are fans of HMK, this character is 99% Jaggy and 1% Jackal. They largely just took the name Jackal, but and also this line is very Jackal and not very Jaggy. But like after that, this is just Jaggy, basically.
Mm-hmm. And then Bat tries to get Kenshiro to come back, but Kenshiro wants to kill Shin instead, and he's like, I can't help you, I have to go do this thing. But then he hears Lin screaming from, like, 300 miles away. Because the one thing that Kenshiro hates is the loud squeal of a child yelling.
Yeah, like, Ken was always able to, like, detect things from, like, he had, like, sharp senses. But it wasn't, like, a pain reaction. He didn't have, like, a, like, no, Charles Xavier, get out of my mind room. You're killing me with your brain bullets. Like, that wasn't what happened whenever the kid was like, ah!
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that in this universe, I had a thought about that, is that, I mean, he talks about, I have to go back and save her because I awakened her. So I think yes. that it's less that he's hearing her screaming and more that he's hearing the tortured screams of Malcolm McDowell's ghost that he put inside of this child.
That's true. He did put Malcolm McDowell's ghost inside of her because she floats like with his soul later. No, that's true.
Because canonically, that's what happened, right? Like,
I think it's funny, like, the only reason he wants to help Paradise is because he made the blind child able to see with her eyeballs the atrocities that are happening. And it's just her specifically. Everybody else in town who's dying and having a horrible time can go to hell. But I caused this one person to be able to see it. Like, okay, Kenshiro, weird moral ground to stand on, but I guess. I don't get it. Anyway, so then it cuts back to town, and an old lady's trying to get water from the well that they're now, the gang is now covering up in a fence to prevent people from drinking. So then Lin, like, kicks a guy in the shin and is like, hey, stop that. So then they take out the guillotine for the child, but it's an adult guillotine, so it's not fitted properly.
That's what I'm saying. This guillotine's all wrong for a kid. It would hit the kid in the chin. It'd be a whole mess. You'd be cleaning up like bone fragments or whatever. Not a good. Yeah, you gotta get a child guillotine if you're gonna guillotine a child. You can't be using the adult. It's not one size fits all.
And the
fact you gotta be at least this tall to ride the guillotine,
right? But the fact that they're using an adult guillotine on a child causes Whippet Dracula much pain.
Yes.
And this is the turning point of Whippet Dracula, where he's like, come on, man, it's just a kid. You can't use an adult guillotine on him. What are you
very
doing?
Concerned about the size of this guillotine for this child, yes. If you're gonna do things, do it right, says Whippet Dracula.
Yeah, come on. So
he's specifically Whippet Nosferatu, by the way, because he's very, like, pointed ears, yes. Balding, like,
I don't know why they needed a Dracula that does Whippets, but every gang does need a Dracula that does Whippets.
Yeah, I was going to say, because every post-apocalyptic gang needs Whippet Dracula. That's
now
why.
I'm, like, noticing a hole in a lot of other films, which is, like, where is their Whippet Nosferatu?
The one with the heart of gold.
Looking.
Yeah. Come on. So then Kenshiro and Bat sneak into Paradise. Which then hard cuts to Julia sniffing those beans again. For some reason. She just loves sniffing those beans. And Shin sees her sniffing the beans, and he gets very mad. He's like, yo, you sniffing them beans again, Julia?
Those beans represent an ideology of taking our sweet time and letting nature heal along with humans just working together to survive the damn thing. I want progress, fast, now, and I don't care how many human lives it takes. And that's why I hate those beans, Julia. And that's the thing, is like, the movie really fails to get this across.
Oh, man.
Listen, I need to make subways again. You don't understand. We need that I Heart New York shirt back. We gotta peak humanity again. He's real big about bringing back New York. Apparently. Just loves the Mets.
He loves New York. He wants New York Ninja to come back. Loves the Mets. Everything.
Me crying to my brother's fiance, who's also kind of my fiance or whatever in the post-apocalypse about beans. It's about the Mets, baby. It's about
the Mets. He just sees, like, a guy crossing the road and almost get hit and go, I'm walking here, and a single tear, like, goes down. Like, he's like, nature's healing, finally. Humanity's back, baby.
Watch where you're fucking going! Oh, that's so beautiful.
Stop looking at the past!
My beans!
Please, Shin, the beans are a metaphor!
So, I don't remember, for some reason I wrote down Kick to the Nuts of the Southern Cross in my book, and in my notebook. There's a lot of ball kicks in this movie, though. I do remember that.
Yeah, strangely high amount of ball kicks. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember why. It's because, so this is the scene where it goes back in time, and Kenshiro, Shin, and Jagiko are met, I guess, for the first time or again. While Kenshiro is giving his beans to Julia. And then they fight. Kenshiro hits Jackal in the head and does the you are already dead. Mm-hmm. Which in the manga happens to Jagi, but then he puts a helmet on. He's like, I win now, fucker. Can't blow up if there's a helmet.
Easy solution, baby.
Yeah, again, pretty cool of one of Doggy's better moments. Just being like, wait. No, I know what happens at this part. I can stop this.
Structural support. That's all it needs.
And then as Shin and Kenshiro are fighting, Shin gives him the nut kick or the nut punch, one of them, of the Southern Cross, multiple times. Just a hard cut of him just punching him in the balls, like 20 times. And then that... And also putting his fingers through his chest caused the, you know, constellation to appear on his chest with the scars. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's all about beans, if you think about it.
You know, what we're saying is it's all about their beans.
It's, yeah. 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 100%.
So then we go back to the real world. There's a lot of just cutting back and forth. Speaking of the cuts, they're always like mid scenes. I have no idea where the fuck we are or what's happening.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's like a really, really big side effect of both the like compressing down so much time that Ilian mentioned earlier, and also the assumption of your familiarity with the source material is they feel very comfortable dropping you, like 70% of the way into it, or like at the rising action of the scene, right at the precipice before the climax, and they'll just drop you in there without any of the buildup, and they're like, yeah, you're already invested in this. And again, for like the two hosts of this podcast who do not know HNK that well, no, they are not. They are not that invested. They don't know what's going on here. And frankly, even as an HNK knower, there were a lot of times I didn't know what was going on here because it was just so rapid fire. Like, by the time I had established what the hell was going on in a scene, it was like, well, we're 70% of the way into the next scene already.
Yeah, you were talking about how, like, it always has, like, these big panning out shots and then just, like, starts zooming back in on somewhere else, but, like, in media res over and over, and it's just disorienting.
Well, there's a few of these, like, really big establishing shots, particularly of, like, Shin on his throne, and you can tell, like, these were supposed to be establishing setup shots for what was, like, at least a 2 or 3 minute conversation or exchange, but then they cut everything except for like 12 seconds of it. So yeah, you just get establishing shot and then immediately another establishing shot. And it's like, whoa, hold on.
I'm a little curious what a director's cut would be like if they put some of those cut scenes back in and re-edited this.
12 hours.
It would be so fucking long though. Yeah, it'd be so fucking long. But I mean, Agent Kate, they don't even do anything like in the fighting game. How am I supposed to one-hit combo a guy in the wall and, like, you know, win the game immediately?
How am I supposed to stab a lightning dagger into someone's foot and then punch them in the dick 10,000 times until
you're supposed to punch them in the dick 10,000 times and then give them 5 high kicks and that's enough to win. Everybody knows that. Yeah.
Well, it did establish a bit of, like, kind of the fighting game stuff, at least from, like, my experience of playing fighting games. Which is that somebody figured out that, like, the high kick move has the lowest frames, and you just use that over and over until someone fucking figures that shit out.
You do use the high kick over and over. The other thing I noticed is that nobody blocks in this movie. And if you got time to block, you got time to kick, right? So, it's very important. So anyway, Rufio confronts Jackal Joggy and then gets stabbed immediately. I guess. And then Kenshiro,
like,
shows up.
And again, it's like, so this is the second time, too, they've shown Jaggy, like, being mean to Rufio. And the first time it was like, part of when they were doing the Jimmy Rustlin' gang. And it was supposed to be showing, like, look how cruel and underhanded this guy is. He'd hit a kid. But the problem is they just showed, like, 3 guys riding around being like, yeehaw! Just, like, shooting random people in the fucking head, just killing people left and right. And then you have Jaggy over here like, I'm gonna slap a 17-year-old. And I'm like, I mean, the 17-year-old was being a little shitty. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, he's kind of an annoying prick. Like, that's fine.
Yeah, all right. As long as it's, like, not too big of a slap.
It's not as bad in comparison. Yeah, that's the problem.
Like, running down the elderly in the streets. Yeah.
Picking up an old lady who's dehydrated, trying to get a glass of water, and being like, chuck roast, no water for you, lady.
So Whippet Dracula thought it was okay that they threw the grandma on the ground, but he's very upset about hitting a kid, though. So,
yeah.
I mean, Whippet Dracula's on the same page there, right? Anyway, so Rufio gets stabbed, Kenshiro shows up, and then the wrestler Vader is there, who's supposed to be, we think, Hart, who's like a whole subplot.
So they just call him, like, Gargantua or something.
Goliath. Yeah.
Goliath.
I think that's only in the credits, too.
I don't think he has a name in the movie.
Garganto, whatever. And, so this big boy season walks out, and they just decide, instead of having him be Mr. Hart, who's like, it's kind of an interesting character with, like, moments of comic relief. Mm-hmm. Like, he just kind of starts crying, and that's when he becomes overwhelmingly powerful. So he just can't stop crying. He gets so overwhelmed with emotion. And in this, he's just like a big guy who yells and has his voice modulated extra low. So he's just kind of like,
and he's everybody. Very much just a WWF wrestler. Yeah.
Yeah, he's just Vader. Like, as soon as you posted that, Boinks, you're like, oh, he was just a pro wrestler. It's like, yeah, that adds up.
Yeah. We were like, man, this dude has, like, extreme wrestler energy. And it's like, oh, he's a wrestler. That would, yeah. That solves the, that mystery.
It's still good casting. He looks like the character should look. It's just he doesn't act like the character should act,
But they don't have any establishment of the character. And that was kind of, like, to expand, I guess, just for one brief second on the thing that I'd said earlier about how, like, they have to condense these stories down. And it seems like, well, I mean, the stories are really basic. Like, guy goes out in the wasteland to go and get revenge on the other school. It seems like that's something that you could compress down. But the big thing about a lot of these, like, manga stories is the reason why they're so long is that it's a lot of character buildup, right? Like, there's a lot of establishment of character motivations and things, and they just chop all of that out, which kind of the point of most of those things, right? Like, because the story is simple. It is all about the characters, and when you just don't have that,
it does lead me back to the director, I think, actually caring about the source material enough to look for somebody that looks like that character for that role, even if they're not gonna, like, write that character. Mm-hmm. Like, they put in the effort to find somebody that kind of looks like that, so...
They try and do some callbacks, for sure, yeah. At least, yeah.
So
and like, so now that we're getting to Kenshiro climbing up Shin's tower, because that is kind of what this part
that is
right?
This is
like
yeah.
The beginning of him climbing up. Okay, so it's like a good time to mention. So there's a really big plot point that's missing here, which it makes the rest of the interactions between Shin and Ken really confused and really confusing, which is the character Julia at this point, completely full of despair from how Shin has been and just completely hopeless about this, being sure she's going to be implicated in like all of these terrible war crimes, all this stuff, throws herself from the balcony. So like it is a very pivotal point. It's a really kind of a big deal. She manages to survive because someone who's like able to take care of it strolls by. But Shin, also just so full of just like despair and regret over this, decides to start claiming he did kill Julia, which then further makes Kenshiro enraged and all that kind of stuff. But that just doesn't happen here. So in the future, there's going to be times where, like, they reference that, where Shin just, like, keeps insisting he killed Julia, and it just... It doesn't make any sense. They just remove that part from the movie because I guess they were like, that's too sad. We can't have the pretty lady who's a prize at the end attempt to kill herself. That's too heavy for the Western media,
I guess. It could be they rewrote it for that. It could also be that they just read it and didn't understand the assignment, right?
Yeah, that too. Maybe. Yeah.
Like they saw, whoa, this fight scene's so cool. Shin keeps telling him he killed Julia, but he didn't. That's awesome. I'm going to leave that in. Right? Like,
because, yeah, what's actually happening in this is that Julia is having a Benny Hill moment with Jaggy down in the basement.
That's true.
Shiro is going
That's
to
true, because Jaggy Jackal is in the basement where they do their fire machine. And it's a mist contraption where when you move the lever left, it shoots fire. And when you move it right, it shoots fire. And you don't know what the fuck either of those mean.
That's a really good point. Like, it really is just, I was thinking, like, it's a very weirdly escape room yeah. where there's just a bunch of stuff that it's like, whoa, that's cool. What does it do? I don't know. But if you turn the knob to the left the right way, it'll just, like, open a door over there.
But it's really weird because Kenshiro's whole motivation right now, ostensibly, is to go and rescue Julia.
Climb the tower, rescue Julia,
Climb the tower, rescue Julia. And instead you have, like, this weird split-focus ending of Jaggy and Julia in the basement having wacky hijinks. And Shin and Kenshiro having this big climactic battle at the top of the tower that doesn't matter. Like, it feels like busy work because he needs to go down and rescue Julia after this, right? Like, that's the whole point.
So, ostensibly, Shin is the mini-boss before Jackal, is how they set it up.
Almost.
Except Julia just deals with Jackal by doing a bunch of Looney Tunes shit.
Yeah, and so, like, I think this is part of the flaw of the only real establishment they had for why Ken wants revenge on Shin so bad is one weird, confusing, stilted flashback of him kind of sticking fingers in his chest, being like, okay, Julia, say you love me instead, which it's like, that's not really the motivation of the story. And so, it ends up with this, like, very strange portion where, you have these things where it's just unrelated. You're right. Like, Julia's just doing her own thing in the basement, and especially because, spoilers, Kenshiro doesn't, like, end up saving her. Like, they end up just cutting to afterwards, after everything is resolved, and him just being like, okay, I'm here now. We're together now.
I guess
great.
We did it. Us together.
I guess. He was lying. Julia is alive. Well, that was nice. Cool. What?
I'm glad he's dead. Fuck that guy.
I'm glad I killed Shin though. In the meantime,
So there's the Shin Kenshiro fight, and it's cool and all. But the more important thing is what the fuck is going on with Shin's wardrobe?
Because Shin
is wearing this like faux leather pleather grocery bag over his nipples.
It's like a corset, like a tan leather
jerkin
corset that
thing?
Almost looks like what's like the rubbery material people wear sometimes, like
latex.
It's like a little latexy.
It's like a latex trash bag.
Yes.
And, a corset, but with like overall straps on it. And it just Katrina's barely like, covers the nips.
Yeah, and Katrina's like pulling on his like...
His overall corset straps.
Yeah, like, his corset straps.
Give me them, show me them titties, boy.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'm like, I'm not editing this episode, but Boyks needs to put in Ty's reaction to that.
What the fuck?
Put him away, slut!
This outfit choices, I'm sorry, I cannot stop looking at whatever this corset thing is. This is insane.
I love how leathery it is.
Yeah, it's like a leather tan trash bag dress.
I was gonna say it feels like a trash bag.
Yeah.
Oh my god, look at that dress.
That is
put those
so
things
crazy.
Away, slut. Why is he wearing this leather like dress gherkin? It's so distracting.
It's so weird.
It's like a butcher. Ty said too, like at first that it was kind of right. Like it's a weird mashup of a lot of things.
It's like an apron almost.
A butcher apron, but except that it's like way too it's a crop top butcher apron.
It's a latex
made out of trash bag.
Butcher's
it's
apron, so but sexy.
Yeah, yeah.
It also goes down to the mid thigh, so it's got a little bit of a summer dress vibe going on.
I've got it. He went to a Spirit Halloween and found an undersized, sexy butcher costume.
I guess. I'm sure the fight that happened was great, but I was so focused on this fucking jerkin.
How could you not be?
It was impossible not to just lose focus and be like, what the fuck is happening with
what
this
thing? What
are
you wearing? Especially because he's wearing this sick King's jacket beforehand, and then he throws it off and you're like, what are those?
That's right, Kenshiro. This is my slut phase. Okay, man.
I'm serving cunt, Kenshiro. And the other thing about the fight that really stood out to me is just is clearly the fight choreographer had one best play, and it was
the kick,
cool right? angles of high kicks and spin kicks, because there are so many of just cut, singular, big spin kick, cut, singular, big spin kick, cut, two high kicks. And that's so much of the fight choreography. It's really sticks out after a point, because there was a point where, in order, I'm just like, wow, this guy likes high kicks. And then, three high kicks comes out. And then Ilion's like, yeah, you know, it's been a while since a nut kick. And then just immediately someone gets dinged in the bell.
There's two moves. Because the only other move is it's a high kick and then a low kick. But not that low.
Sometimes there's the headbutt of the North Star. That too. Yeah.
Also, damn, this guy loves high kicks.
Yeah.
And by this guy, I mean the fight choreographer.
My ass!
Oh, yeah.
I got the paralyzer! And another paralyzer!
Uh-oh, another guy to kick.
Let's be fair, earlier he was big on the nut kick, so...
It's true. And there's another. Ilion with the gift of prophecy.
There we go. Getting some low kicks in there.
And you get a kick. But so the fight choreographer, by the way, is actually just Gary Daniels' personal trainer.
Oh my god.
They didn't even get a fight choreographer.
Yeah.
That's why he does it. All right, I taught you how to do a high kick. Let's do another high kick. Every time.
It really matches up with, the name of the show.
Fist
of the North Star.
Yeah, I know. It works, yeah.
Also, it makes a lot of sense to me, at least, that the fight choreographer was a personal trainer, because that also explains why when Rufio was teaching them fighting earlier, why your gut check reaction was that shit's typo. That's 100%. Yeah. That's an aerobics class, bro.
It's because it's just an aerobics class. Yeah.
I didn't connect that, but good call. Yeah.
Kenshiro hears from Shin that Julia's dead. which is, as we explain, unrelated to anything that actually happens in the movie, and also against Shin's moral code as a character.
Yeah, because again, yeah, in the source material, like, there was a reason Shin did it, right? Like, it was an act of resolve. It was an act of, like, understanding he was going to enrage Kenshiro. Like, there was clear motivation behind it. Shin was honorable. He just was willing to do this for very clear reasons, which is something you have to cut for a film.
And
so,
also,
like, it just comes off as very strange.
Was dead, right? Or is that later? Like,
Well, she had thrown herself from the window.
Okay.
She had survived, but
dead.
Yeah,
he thought she was
She had attempted to take her own life, and Shin basically treated that as if she had, because again, for the purposes of how he related to Julia, she had.
But
you know?
But earlier, when Shin was mad at Julia for huffing the beans, he knocked the bean bag out of her hand, and a bunch of beans spilled on the floor, and one fell into the crack in the floor of the Southern Cross. And this caused a bean to sprout during this fight, which then Ken's like, wait, Julia can't be dead. Those are the beans I gave her.
Yes.
Which that...
And so all of his blood magically goes back into his body
after
it was exploded out of him.
Yeah, after the squib explosions from his organs exploding, he's like, no, actually, I won't die.
Yeah, my man's already down 2 pints, and he's just I'm Gucci. No, it's fine. I got, like, another quart of blood in me. I'll just be extra mad so it's extra pressurized.
And then after he kicks Shin in the face a bunch of times, and Shin goes, again! Again! Over and over again. Then Shin's on the ground dying. He's like, hey, man, I'm kind of an asshole, and I deserve this, or whatever. And then Ken kills him, and he just dies like a wuss.
Yeah, Shin, the villain whose perhaps most iconic moment is in the final confrontation with Kenshiro, after Kenshiro does light him up and hits him with the technique that guarantees his death shortly thereafter, the thing Kenshiro's famous for. Shin walks to the window and says, no, I'm not giving you anything, and throws himself out the window. He does not actually lie on the ground and go, I'm sorry, Ken, you had some good points ideologically. No, he goes to the window with me.
He's like, Ken, maybe we could debate this later and over dinner. Like, okay.
This is like... so famous that I promise I won't bring up the HNK fighting game other than this. If you are on Shin's stage and it is Ken versus Shin, and you do take away, like, get Shin in the position where you can instant kill him, like hit him with a fatal KO, he can instead do a very bizarre input, and it will just end the match with Shin taking his own life. Like, you can just do that, which is like wild as hell.
Because it's
just like so key to the story. So having that be removed also, like, it feels like such a waste, because it's such a cool scene to do, right? Someone flying out of like a high tower window, like, with special effects, you can make that look so good. Like Cowboy Bebop falling out the big window of the church looks amazing. True. Everybody loves it.
Yeah, but this is also 95, so instead you would have gotten the Die Hard
disappear.
Waving noodle arms out the window.
No, that
would have
been better.
Which is a little less cool.
Imagine if they just, like, filmed it like that, but it was just like him saluting the whole way.
That would have been great. That would have been great. So then Julia killed Jackals, Jaggy. Ken kills Shin by him just going, bleh, I'm dead now. And then
he like punches him in the head once really hard, and his eyes roll back in his head. I'm like, did he not or did he die?
It could be both. So then Ken is start wandering around the tower again, still looking for Julia. A whole gang of random dudes show up, but then they all just kneel down because Julia's there in the background, and they lived happily ever after, and everybody got water or whatever. I don't know. It just ends.
They also can't decide whether or not the gang respects Julia, because, like, most of the time, they do not. They just kind of, like, slap her around, and they're like, you're lucky Shin likes you, or I'd just, you know, have my way with you and throw you down a well. But no, at this point, they're like, our queen, which, since when, bro? Like, this is the Jimmy Rustling gang. I don't think they respect the monarchy.
No, it's a weird turn, because, like, Jaggy was, like you said, like, he was being the nasty boy to her the whole time, like, man, you know, lucky that Shin's here.
And the only thing that caused any of the gang to reconsider their actions was when they were going to guillotine a child, right?
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense.
I don't know if we mentioned it, but there was a scene where the small child was in a prison in a cage.
True.
And starts singing a little song or whatever that she's been singing throughout the film. And so all the other gang comes in and is just like, shut up, you stupid kid. I can't get enough out of you. And then Whippet Nosferatu turns back and goes, wait. She's just a kid. Let her sing. It's okay. Kids are allowed to have feelings.
She knows fucking Wonderwall. That's my favorite song.
And she starts singing again, and he, like, closes his eyes and, like, leans against the bars and, like, cries a little. Like, just, like, fucking bro loves music.
He's like, I remember laughter. I remember joy.
What a good character. I'm glad we got to win that story.
And so that's when Ken is busting into the tower up front. Jaggy goes to try and snipe Kenshiro in the back of the head. This is right after Rufio had gotten stabbed. And so after Ken blows up everybody, Whippet Nosferatu like walks out with all of his weapons in his hands in the air and is just like, I'm sorry, man. I know when I'm beat. I realize I'm sorry. It turns out I like the arts and I'm thinking about getting into acting.
And I'm retiring next week.
So much to live for now. And then immediately
I finished having a character arc. I'm like not just Whippet Dracula anymore. I've got feeling. And then he gets shot in the head because as Jaggy's going to snipe Kenshiro, Rufio tackles him like in the worst way possible, I guess.
Bat fucks up literally everything in this movie. Yeah. There's not a single thing he does right. The one thing he does to save Kenshiro kills the only character that mattered. Whippet Dracula.
It's a shame. So, real quick, this is also the director of Hellraiser 2. And here's another Rough Cuts connection.
Oh, God.
A Doggone Adventure. Right. Which is one of our favorite movies, quote unquote, probably. I don't know. It's somewhere up there. And then Gary Daniels, or Kenshiro, is, of course, Brian from Tekken. But he's also in Santa's Summer House.
What?
So we have another
Rough Cuts. Is he the dad?
He's dad. Yeah, Dean.
Oh my God.
So we have two Rough Cuts connections in this movie. Minimum.
Yeah, that was the one thing that I was going to mention because I'm like, all right, I'm like, we need to stop doing non-dog movies, but also this one kind of has some wild connections because the Doggone movies are extremely rough.
Yeah, Elian, you seem to have like a better eye for identifying like actors from this period too, and you were just like popping off on like just like they brought this person in, they brought this person in. Why did they bring this person in?
Like Chris Penn is Jackal, which is Sean Penn's brother, and notably like one of the stars of Reservoir Dogs and a few things like that. Like, there's Clint Howard is one of just like
random. You might know him as that guy in that movie you've seen.
Ron Howard's brother. It's like,
and also Ice Cream Man, the horror movie.
Yeah, but he's in a lot of things. Like he started out as a child star. Like he was on original Star Trek as a child, and like there's just all of these really big name actors. Melvin Ben Peebles is just like a random dude. He's the dude giving like weird pacifist platitudes as they're doing Tai Bo to Kill.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Like,
it's an interesting timepiece.
Yeah. All of a sudden you have like all of these actual actors and then Gary Daniels and Costas Mandylor. I had to look him up as Shin and Kenshiro. Mm-hmm. So you have like this wild dichotomy and gulf in the way that, like, the acting abilities of these characters are, right? Like,
one other fun fact. So, Gary Daniels, or Kenshiro, liked this movie so much that he named one of his kids Kenshiro after this.
That rules!
Oh, hell, which that's so good!
It actually brings me completely around on this.
Dudes Rock!
That is an actual Dudes Rock moment, yes?
Hell yeah. So anyway, that's it for the movie. Let's go ahead and rate the dogs. Mm-hmm, I counted two dogs. So
yes, because we have two.
There's Jackal, who's a jackal, and his name is Jaggy, but they call him Jackal. He got hit in the head by Kenshiro, but thought real quick and made a cool leather strap helmet, I guess. A very intricate and complicated one, which I don't know how he would do that in the time that he had, but sure.
Yeah.
He's kind of a real asshole, and he thinks of himself as, like, a manipulator behind the scenes, which he is in the manga, but not in the movie. He's just a guy.
Yeah, okay, yeah, you know what, Boyx? I actually forgot to mention that. Yeah, another pretty key point of the whole shit of the first arc of Fist of the North Star is that Shin is doing all of these things because Jaggy tricked him. And at some point, Shin realizes somebody tricked him and is trying to figure out who. So, like, that's part of the thing is, like, again, Shin's not an idiot. Like, he's pretty competent.
It's only brought up in the last, like, 5 minutes of the movie as he's letting his story out to Julia in their cool escape room basement that has well lit and well written signs about how to get out of the street level sign to the door that leaves this the basement on fire. I guess.
With a frosted glass window, convenient for breaking in a spooky way.
Yeah. So he can do a spooky jump scare. It's tough for me to rate Jackal. I think Jackal's kind of a piece of shit, which is obvious, but not as much of a piece of shit as the people throwing old people, like, under the street and just shooting people at random for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe, like, a 9 out of 10 dog. Not a very good dog, but, you know.
Yeah. Clever dog, I'd say. Clever dog. Yeah.
And then, of course, we have Whippet Nosferatu.
Yes.
Who is the best boy. And
loves the arts, has an actual character arc.
Does whippets for fun.
Just to remind everybody, when we say whippets, you know those, like, little blue bottles of, like, butane or propane or whatever that you put on a little nozzle that you light and then you use it as, like a blowtorch to, like, heat things up or whatever? Yeah, it's just he's hitting one of those when it's unlit. he's just taking raw hits of, like, butane to the dome, which is, like, so based.
I was going to say, this dog is fucking lit because he's full of propane.
He has a change of heart, and in another movie, he would have been the protagonist.
I love propane and saving the children.
Yeah. And more movies need this character. I think somebody should just write a movie that just has this character in it again and just not change anything.
This is just the Hank Hill Mad Max adaptation.
I also love it too because he's like such a background character that's so aggressively villain-coded, like, aesthetically. Like, he's got the weird scaly skin thing, he's got the pointy ears, all that and all that. And just out of nowhere, it's like, no, this is the one guy with a heart of gold. It's like, really? Yes. Whippet Nosferatu?
Yes, okay. Yeah.
Like, people can change.
There's all these, like slightly biker-looking guys that you're like, okay, yeah, I can kind of see them being villainous. But then there's, like, this dude that's, like, his teeth are basically filed into points.
He's got pointy
and you're like,
ears.
Okay, this is the nastiest man imaginable. No, man. Like, don't judge a book by its cover.
I would rate Whippet Dracula a solid 13 out of 10. That is a good dog right there.
Oh, yeah. This is the best dog. It's really tragic that in a movie that I think that the main problem is that they didn't expand on character motivations enough, because you don't get, like, the ideology clashing with Kenshiro and Shin. You don't get, like, all the relationship stuff with Julia and, like, the love triangles that are happening there and all this stuff. And Jaggy manipulating the one character that they shove all of the arc into is fucking Whippet Nosferatu.
I also want to point out,
They got that character first, and they were like, we did it. Yeah. We made the perfect character. There's no reason to write anyone else. We're done. But just do the rest of the movie.
The other thing I want to point out is this movie is like a 2.7 on Rotten Tomatoes with 5,000 reviews or something. I don't think this movie is as bad as people think it is. It's just kind
of... Is that 2.7 out of 10?
Yes. Out of 10.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I don't think it's that low.
Especially for the period, this is like a solid 7 out of 10 at least.
This is one of those, I think, that has become a little infamous because of what it is. And it's not actually as bad as what people think it is.
No, it's not, like, at all.
It's generic. It's schlocky. It's like definitely a downgrade overall from the source material. But, like, that's adaptations in general, right? Like, for the most part. No, I think if you're willing to go into this as just like a post-apocalyptic action movie that's a little schlocky, you could have a fun time. Yeah,
it's like it definitely has its issues, but at the same time, it's not like there's nothing that's particularly egregious. No. We weren't seeing like boom mics in the shots,
and there's also just like random fun artsy shots for no reason, like somebody's eyeball and then the rest of the scene to the side, like for no reason, things like that.
And like another thing that HNK I think has an advantage of culturally, or Fist of the North Star, is it being adapted in goofy ways by different cultures is like kind of core to it. Because there's even very famous European versions of Hakuto no Ken, where for censorship they replaced all the blood and the explosions and stuff with just rainbows everywhere.
Oh my god!
So
you
get all of these like. Yeah, you get all these strange versions of, like, you're already dead, and then a guy just throwing up a ton of rainbows and stuff like that. And, like, the creator even, and, like, just the original fans and stuff, just, like, they think it's just so funny, because it's just so wild, right? And, like, the original material's wild, too. It's very goofy. Again, later on in HNK, it runs for so long, you get situations like fighting a Dracula in an underground lake who might secretly be related to Jesus or whatever. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. That's all anime do. They all eventually fight Dracula. We've seen JoJo.
I've seen JoJo, yeah. I know
how this works. I was just saying, like, with all of the anime adaptation and the schlockiness and stuff like that, and just how much you were saying, like, all the adaptations are goofy. It's one of those things where it itself was like a pastiche of a lot of things, right? Sure. Like, Kenshiro's very obviously just Bruce Lee. Like, including the yatatatata and, like, all of that. Like, he's extremely Bruce Lee coded. Like, it's very much a Mad Max kind of thing. Like, it's itself just kind of a very basic thing that way. So it makes sense for it to be this kind of a schlocky, you know, riff on it also. It's just too bad they didn't flesh out a character somewhere.
Yeah, and I'm sure the live-action sequel to this was much better. But that's it for this episode.
Wait, is there a sequel?
There could be. We're writing it right now.
Okay.
It's the Nosferatu Dracula sequel we all want.
You've pulled out some shit on me that I have not expected. So I just didn't know. I need to know in the future what's going to come for me.
Well, anyways, what's going to come for you is more episodes of Rough Cuts. And you can follow us on social media. Was that a good transition?
Yes. Yeah, you nailed it. Yeah.
Smooth.
On Blue Sky, on co-host at Rough Cuts. You can email us at roughcutscast@gmail.com. You can also support us on Patreon. And, of course, we had our good friend Ty Tuesday here guesting, so thank you again for that. Is there anything you want to plug?
Sure. If you're a podcast person, if you're a podcast enthusiast, I've got one I'm on that's pretty neat. It's The Great and Terrible AHS, where we talk about American Horror Story, a long-running TV show ostensibly about horror. I've been watching it for 5 seasons. I have yet to find the horror, but I'm sure we'll find it soon.
It's in there somewhere.
I mean, the clown masturbating has to be horrific in some way.
He was jerking it over the melon, not the melons, bro.
Anyway.
Put those away, slut.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yep. Sounds good. I think I'm going to go check out that Japanese dub of this American film, Fist of the North Star, sometime. So that sounds pretty good. Yeah. I don't know how they're going to adapt it, though. I guess we'll see.
All right,
see ya.
We're gonna end this.
Okay, I'm literally hooking up a VCR to the internet. That's what's happening right now. So. God damn it.
Internet of everything, eat your fucking heart out.
You got but Bluetooth on that, dork.
But can you play Doom on it?
Right.
God, all right, Bluetooth VHS nightmare phrase.
The fuck? Who the hell are these dogs? Jesus Christ, it's like a fucking dog movie in here.